like the most impressive one, you know. I want the RM and the mRNA one, you know. Don't give me the deactivated virus thing.
I learned so many medical things I never knew I cared about these days.
Yeah, we're all experts now, you know. We're all experts in epidemiology and vaccinations.
So very
and stuff.
True.
Our awareness of this topic has now just improved. Anyway, we're live, folks. So welcome, everybody, to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 113. We're bringing it to you every Friday. And I'm delighted to host this show because it's a topic, I think, that it's a really tough challenge in the tech recruitment market in particular, but one that I think is a lot of people are wrestling with: how to hire more women into engineering. So we're going to have a fantastic show today. We're going to talk about all the aspects that we can kind of look at as to, you know, what is the cause of this gender disparity in tech, and how actually we can improve it with different techniques. Is it through sourcing? Is it through adverts? Is it through assessment tech? Is it through whatever? We're going to throw it all in there today, and it's going to be a great way to explore it. Anyway, before we begin, let's do a quick sound check. Anybody can hear me okay? Let's go with Crowdcast firstly. If you can hear me okay on Crowdcast, just please say hello. Yes, Hong, I can hear you. We should be multicasting this. So we should be out on LinkedIn for sure. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, please give me a like and a dislike. Give me some sort of notification that you can hear me okay. I got new headphones, by the way, because I lost my wired headphones. This is a bit of a risk. I've never used these before. So I hope the audio and the video is going to work fine. And we should be out on Facebook as well. So if you're there, please let me know. Give me some sign you can hear me okay. I think we're live on all three channels, Markelos, which is exciting. You know, this is always thrilling to me to see things working properly.
I think I have stage fright. So many people looking at us now.
Indeed. Don't worry. They're all like fake paid accounts, you know. All the audience are cheaply paid sock puppet accounts, you know. They're there to just give us a cheer.
Okay, so take some of the stress off then.
Indeed, indeed. Anyway, I'm honored to bring you back in, Markelos. You've been on the show before, but I think the last time you were actually a guest on a panel. So this is the first time of you co-hosting with me. So it's great to have you on. Why don't you introduce yourself, actually, Markelos? Who are you? What is it you do? Why do you care about this topic?
Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be here. I kind of envy your position as a host. So I'm gradually working my way up. You know, it starts with guest, then co-host, then who knows what happens.
Progress, promotion. This is a promotional track for you, Markelos.
So I'm the CEO at Brick, and you know, BRYQ, but it spells like brick. And people say, why brick? A, because BRICK, you can't have it. And because we feel like we're providing the foundational building block for businesses, which is not bricks, but it's people. And we love what we do. And Brick is talent intelligence platform. We're trying to help people match employers with candidates and make sure that we place the right people in the right position. So assist all those HR decisions, whether you're talking about hiring, whether you're talking about career development, whether you're talking about internal mobility. Can we make these things better, faster, and, you will never have guessed this, more diverse?
Indeed. And in fact, these types of technologies, I think, are very, very exciting, because it seems that the, you know, the difference between hiring externally and internally and things like that, that's starting to fade away. At the end of the day, we're all trying to fit the right person into the right role at the right time. And that's requiring more than the tooling and technology we have currently. So great to have you on the show, Markelos. You know, oh, goodness me. And basically, you have a job. Your primary purpose in this exercise is to tell us what was interesting in recruiting Brain Food last week. Did you read the newsletter, Markelos?
Was I supposed to? No one told me, Hung. But hey, because I read it every week, here's one great segue into what we were discussing. This is a changing job landscape. And one article that I found really interesting is the one talking about, what was the title? The Labor Markets Paradox. And what we've been seeing recently, I picked up a quote from the article, which I loved because it worries me so much. It says, millions remain unemployed after losing work in the pandemic, but businesses say they can't find enough people to hire. And unfortunately, we've been hearing this from our customers. Developers have always been a scarce resource, but now it expands to beyond that. And there are two different dynamics. On the one hand, you have this labor force that, for some of the reasons that's explained in the article, isn't willing, isn't able, or isn't interested in returning to the workforce. On the other hand, you have this the whole labor market being crumpled upside down, right? Because remote work, because globalization, because all of these things that we didn't have before. And I think there are some very interesting points, not answers quite yet. That's the main thing. No one has figured out what the new labor market looks like.
That was fascinating, wasn't it? Because, folks, if you didn't know about this, I've just shared it in the chat stream there. Basically, there is a paradox. Like, aren't we all struggling to hire people? It seems that it's like a really difficult to hire people. And yet there's tens of millions of people that have actually lost their jobs over the last 12, 18 months or so, and they seem to not like returning to the market in the same way. So the paradox is there should be surplus labor, and yet it's a real struggle to hire. I'd be really interested to know whether this has been your experience or not on that, and what your theory is. Why is this the case? There was a couple of theories shared by those economists in that article. So well worth diving in there if you have some thoughts on it. What else, Marcelos?
So that was a great one. And then, you know how I'm always looking for the best way to predict future job performance? We're always looking at what's the one thing that can help me tell that Hung is going to be better than Marcelos at hosting this show, which is sad but true. I try, and eventually I'll improve. So there was this article on pupil size being an indication of intelligence. Yeah. And that got me thinking, right? I love a good indicator. I'd love if I could measure everything and give my customers an indication that says he is the man or the woman, conversely, for the role. But there hasn't been one to date. And when you see something that's physiological, which immediately makes you think that it's undeniable, right? It's the physiology of people. Larger pupils, more intelligent people. You wanna love this. But what I find with studies like this is that it's an interesting first step. So I kind of love getting into this idea of, hey, should we start looking at this? I don't know if you've ever watched Gattaca, the movie.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, perfect.
Gattaca was all about that. I'll take your DNA and then I know everything there is to know about you, which is kind of a future dystopia in terms of work. I hope it's not going to end up being like that. But the point is that it's promising. It's promising to have more stronger indicators. On the other hand, I would never rush to draw conclusions based on a single study. A study says this, a study says that. It may have worked, it may be true, but you really need validation. And this has always been one of the founding principles. When we do adopt and we do evolve everything that we do, we always want things that have significant backing behind them. I want to make sure that if I'm going to help someone make a career decision, if I'm going to say that I strongly believe that Hung is better than Marcelos, I have reasonable authority to do so. I have enough data to back it up. I have enough studies. And it's not just me. Because what we found is that it's really easy to have blinders as a person or even as a team. We do have our internal blinders, and we try to always have external people view and audit what we do so that we get a better understanding. Having said that, it does sound exciting and promising, though.
I first read that and I was firstly excited, but then also concerned because of exactly this type of sense that maybe it becomes like, what if it was actually accurate? I went to that sort of level of thinking to it where, okay, what if you can tell someone's intelligence based on your pupil size, folks? Like literally you could measure it and then determine, you know what, this person is actually not that smart because the pupil size is too small. Let's get rid. Now, if that was actually the case, scientifically proven at some point, there's a huge ethical issue there, isn't there? Where you think, can we start using biometric markers of this type to make decisions on hire fire or whether you take this person on board? So this was
it
something
definitely
that
definitely gives a whole new meaning to the phrase "look me in the eye" or "look me eye to eye." It becomes something completely new. Here's one thing that we've learned, though. You know, we do assessments. We try to get a proxy, not so much of intelligence, but at least of skill. And skill and intelligence are somewhat related, though not linearly. And what we always tell our customers is that it's not only intelligence, it's not only skill that matters. You always have to look for a balance. Skill is important, and conversely, intelligence is important. And on the other hand, you have personality. Personality is almost as important, if not more important. And thirdly, and not necessarily less or more important, you have the fit for the company. And everybody knows, you know, instinctively, you get a, I don't know, a front-end developer. Front-end developers are not interchangeable. They're still people. A front-end developer who's going to thrive for Google is not necessarily the same front-end developer who's going to thrive at the environment that we provide at Brick. These are different people. Yet people still say, I want the smartest person. We did a very nice study the other day with our VC, where we took a lot of C-level people from the VC, and we said, okay, let's run them through our assessment, see what kind of profile we can figure out from these people, these founders, we call them, or the C-level executives. And, you know, we have this normal distribution of skill, not intelligence. And you'd think that our founders would be on the very right-hand side, right, where they're exceptionally. And they're not. What we've seen is that, you know, the scale is from 0 to 100, 50 being the average. Our founders were mostly between 60 and 70. And that means that, you know, they were mostly above average intelligence, but we had only, in a small data set, admittedly, of like 30 people, we had only two people who were above 80. And what it tells you is that being super intelligent, while great, isn't always necessarily an asset. And that, my personal experience, and that's my personal bias speaking, says that intelligence usually comes at the cost of personality. People who are super intelligent, they are not as social, they're not as functional. Yeah. They don't tolerate bad guests in their hosts, in their shows, things like that.
It's why I'm super tolerant, you know. No, but actually you make a very valid point. Like intelligence, maybe it is overrated, particularly when it comes down to like the raw computational power of your brain. You know, if we want to isolate intelligence as doing that, how much of your job actually does involve this, and how much does it involve things like being able to work with other people and being able to be like emotionally in tune with what people are looking to achieve at this point? I think it is true to say that some people that are hyper-powered in terms of their intellect can sometimes be, you know, difficult colleagues to work with, particularly if they've kind
of... We've all been there.
Right, you know, particularly if they've wrapped up some ego in there, you know, where they're, you know, a little bit contemptuous of other people's opinions and so on. I think we've seen that. I think, therefore, the science of it then, of the pupil size, may actually be valid. But we can kind of temper it a little bit with this concept of, you know, is it the only thing we think about? We go back to having multiple ways to assess.
And you know that undoubtedly it's not the only thing. Intelligence is a great thing. Anything in itself is a great thing. What we figured out over the years that doesn't exist is a silver bullet. I wish there was one metric that would value people, but it's also relative. It's relative to the role, the company, and different combinations work.
And even context, right? There could be like a role at a certain moment in time that role changes or the context changes in some way. And the perfect candidate 6 months ago actually is a suboptimal candidate now because of some situation that's occurred, which changes the situation completely. So adaptability is a thing we need to care about. Anyway, let's move on because we need to talk about topic at hand here, Markelos. And the topic
what?
At hand
I have
is-
more topics that I read. You're going to cut
no.
me off?
Two is fine because we want to talk about gender diversity into tech. And there's a very specific and narrow focus. We could go obviously massive on this, but the narrow focus for this is how do we hire more women into engineering? I think this is a topic I think most people care about. I'll be interested in your personal view first as to how you go about and tackle this as a hiring manager. So forget about the technologies at this point in time. You know, when you started the company, Markelos, and you thought, you know what, I'm going to start, you know, building my business, building my team. What do you think about in terms of trying to achieve some sort of balance in the business? Was it sort of something, did you have a technique? Did you have thinking around this? Or was it simply, you know, we couldn't sort of deal with it at that point in time?
When you talk about women, it ends up being a discussion about diversity, right? Because in place of women, you can always have any underrepresented group. But women, because it's half of the population, actually a bit more than half, is a great way to illustrate the problem. And it always goes back, how do I hire people best? And that's a question that we always try to answer. We always try to refine. Again, not one perfect method, but when we set up to create Brick, we are still a small team, right? We're less than 20 people, and we're a distributed team. Some of our people are in Greece, some are in the UK, a lot of them are in the US. How do I choose people? Is it the same criteria all over the world? And once you start doing the process, you have to get all stages right. And when I say right, there is no universal right, but you have to pay attention to every stage. So it starts with sourcing. You have to source for what you need. And you're probably very familiar with this statistic. I wish I knew whom I'm quoting now, but we can get back to that. That says that women will only apply when they're almost at 100% of the requirements. Men, on the other hand, if they're above 70%, they're kind of like, hey, okay, that's good enough. I can apply for this. So when you even write the job description and you over-specify, you're already excluding a lot of people who would have most of what you need. And this is one of the advices we always give our customers. They're saying, oh, you know, I have this requirement and that requirement. And then we see a candidate that they hire and we say, but this person doesn't have 3 years of experience. Yes, but he was so good in all the other areas, which means that having 3 years of experience was not a hard requirement. So one thing we always suggest to doing is that you're setting up your funnel, you do your sourcing. If there are hard requirements, make them yes or no questions. If you need people to know SQL, ask them, do you know SQL? If you need them to know what's modern these days, Python, ask them if they know Python. If that's not important, you can live without it and you can teach people, leave it outside. Expand your talent pool. And it's always going to be like that. How can you attract diversity? Start by expanding your talent pool. If I'm looking for people who have 7 years of experience in VR, I'm probably going to find like 100 candidates worldwide. Don't expect that to be a diverse pool.
On that note, actually, I'm trying to find this report because there has been basically some consensus on this, where it seems there's gender variance in how people respond to advertising. And I think the research you mentioned, I believe, has been backed up several times. It's simply about how we think about compatibility and perhaps our fit to the opportunity.
But you've seen all those tools that go around that help you with that, right? There is there's a bunch. I know there is Textio, and I think it came to my attention recently that JobVite had a free tool for that, that people can go and use and see.
JobVite have produced a new tool. I think there's lots of them out there, which are there basically to look at how tailored your job ad is to the default, which is addressing the male audience. So if you wanted to expand your talent pool with more women, then you need to basically remove some of those things that you've structured that have been optimized for men. And having years on experience, for instance, when you think about it, it doesn't make much sense. Like, what does it actually mean when you say 5 years experience of SQL? Does it mean that I've been sitting there and writing a single query for 5 years? That doesn't give me any skill. Right, but I can still say I got 5 years of doing it, right? However, if I spent 6 months intensively, like literally pulling the thing apart, I may well have more skill than the person that says 5 years. So I remember actually back in the day, Markelos, we were actually warned against a tech CV that had overly long period of time with the technology, because we might be then thinking this person might simply be an operator of the system and not much of a developer of it. They're literally sitting in an environment where that technology exists, but they're not doing particularly expansive things. It's like driving a car. How much experience do you have driving a car? Well, guess what? If you take the same route every Sunday to do your shopping, you don't drive anywhere else, you could drive that car for 20 years, but you'd be inferior to a person that runs around and does a taxi job for 6 months.
Well, if you ask my wife, I've been driving around for more than 20 years, and she still claims that I'm a lousy driver.
I can believe your wife.
I'm sure she's wrong.
I'm prepared to believe your wife immediately. Okay, let's bring on some guests here because this is an exciting topic, and we want to start bringing on some tech recruiters first that have experience in recruiting more women into engineering. So let's bring Ala on and Owana if they are both here, which I think they are. So Ala Pavlova, let's see whether she can come on here.
And let me give some context while you're trying to bring on live. And yep. I was saying that, you know, sourcing is one thing, and then the biggest thing is screening and selecting people for your shortlist, because this is where most of the bias goes in. And this is where people looking for people who, you know, finish the great school where, you know, they are, I don't know, UCL yeah. graduates or whatever is fantastic these days. Or all the other these other markets that are simply biased. They're not necessarily great, but it's what people is used to looking at. Instead of looking for what are the skills and the personality traits that are going to make Oana, Markelos, whomever, a great developer. So that's the next important thing for me, and I'm going to let the tech recruiter speak about this.
No, I think it's very important. Credentialism, you know, prestige hiring even. The idea that person's amazing because of things that they've got on their CVs. Anyway, let's say hello to our friends here. Let's go to you first, Owana. By the way, great lighting, Owana. Have you got a new ring light or something? You've
been like, no, I'm in the office. This is the Wayfair lighting natural.
I really like it. Anyway, Owana, can you introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Owana Iordachescu here. I am currently managing tech recruitment, analytics, and marketing at Wayfair in Berlin. I've been in the tech industry for the past 10 years or so, worked in Amsterdam, Dublin, Paris, a bunch of different organizations with specific purpose to bring more diversity in tech as well. So happy to be again here, Hung. Thank you for inviting me. Nice to see you.
No, great.
So, Ala, again, I think we've been before here, so very nice being here.
You are. All of you have been on to Brave Food Live before. We're bringing all the heroes back. Okay, Ala, let's say hello to you. Who are you? What is you do, Ala?
Yeah, hi, everyone. Yeah, my name is Ala. I'm an interim tech recruiter at Miro. I do have a lot of, let's say, interest to the topic of the diversity in general. And I did have requests from companies like, hey, can we have a sourcing workshop about that? And I'm going to share some links with you guys. So that's something that I've been busy with a lot. But yeah, I'm based in Amsterdam. Love Brain Food Show. So I hope that you're going to guys have some interesting thoughts out of it.
Cool. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us on this. Let's have a look at the wider topic. Women in engineering, Markelos has already mentioned something about job advertising and, you know, the idea that we need to communicate in a way that is compatible with a wider audience. You know, you can't just like talk in a way that's addressing this segment, which has previously only been men. What other techniques, what other things do we need to do as a business to try and get more women into the engineering function particularly? Is there anything that's immediately obvious to you when you encounter a business that's asking for this, or when you've sort of had to embrace that challenge yourself? Any thoughts on that? Go to you first, Owana.
Sure. I'll just bring two points that are, funnily enough, not obvious all the time.
Okay,
one
perfect.
Is role models. How is your organization currently? Your interviewers, your leaders, people who shape somehow where the business is going. Can you show me that I will be represented if I'm going to join that organization? And I don't think we do enough of that. There's a bit of a confirmation bias. I know this person that I always go for the PR piece, or I always go for a conference, and you keep on going there instead of just understanding how diverse your business actually is and really spotlighting those people more. And I see Ala also smiling there, so I'll maybe ask her to see how she benefited from that, because I know you're doing this very actively. And second, I would say, do we cater to the audience? Imagine benefits. What were we putting in our adverts 5-10 years ago? Ping pong tables, party, like a lot of things that were not necessary.
Beer Fridays.
Exactly. I was going to say alcohol. I mean, obviously, of course, men and women drink alcohol, but it's very, it's also gendered, right? The idea, the concept of drinking at desk is quite gendered, I think. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
right? So I discovered when I entered organizations, and we had to kind of really think, how do we want to attract this audience, this diverse audience? And you uncovered that your organization actually has a wide diversity of benefits and perks. And we don't, again, we don't specify them as much, right? A lot of companies now, they have maybe transition treatment for people transitioning, right? Or you have an extended maternity or paternity leave, which is not necessarily advertised, and it would attract a different type of crowd. All these things, they're shifting. I see them, right? Like companies do this, but it is, these are my two first things.
All right, so to summarize real quick there, Oana, what you're saying is, number one, if there is some sort of, if you do have people from underrepresented groups in your business, then you've got to try and kind of have conversations with them to see whether they'd be happy to help represent the business in some way. Because it could be there's certain characters in your company that end up just dominating, you know, being the face of the company, for example. And that's all well and good because maybe that's their job, but sometimes you also need to think, you know, are we just communicating to the right demographic all the time? So there's the first point. Second point you're saying is, you know what, there's all the branding stuff, but you also got to look at things like, what are you offering to the people? You know, are you offering things that are optimized for different types of people, flexible working, let's say, maternity leave, different things that will address, or should we say, a more female friendly? And that in itself may not be something that is immediately broadcastable, but it will soon start developing a theme where people will understand that, you know, you're sensitive to this. Okay, cool. Let's go to you, Ala. Give us a couple of things. You know, quick summary.
Sure. Actually, I had candidates who said, I'm sorry if you don't have any women in the leadership. This is not the company I would like to work. And candidate said, yeah, sorry, I don't want to have an interview with you. But it's fine. So that's something that you can improve. That will be my inputs. I actually typed the rating in the chat. So I would like to encourage companies and maybe even, you know, communities to create this kind of, you know, rating that you can see that this company is actually very friendly. They have built it as a company culture, and then the company will probably compete with each other to become one of those that everyone wants to work, not only women, but that's one thing I would say. And the second one, so I would like to post it in the chat as well, is about investing in the communities. I would like to, for example, to ask the company, hey, can we help Ruby on Rails girls community to get some mentorship? There are really, so this is the links to the communities that you can find in Europe that are very oriented to engage more women engineers. Why not to invest in there? Why not to give them some boost of technologies, maybe, you know, explain them how the interview works, etc. So what technologies they use, just some help. So that will be my two intake.
You know what, I love that. Because the second one first, I like that particularly because it's very doable, isn't it? Like you could simply go to a female oriented engineering community and give some job search coaching, let's say. Or you could say, you know what, this is how we recruit, this is how we assess, and I'm sure people would be very interested to know that because they're all like, you know, at some point looking for work or potentially advancing careers, they'll be interested to know how your recruiting process works. That's a doable thing. So interact with the communities and make sure that you're providing the people in those communities opportunities to learn about things that you can offer them. Be a bit more open policy. Okay, very, very good. And you mentioned there's a rating system. So this is the fairy god boss. I wonder who that is actually. This is a list of businesses, isn't it? It's a league
Elastic,
table, I believe.
Elastic is actually in the first place. So I do know these guys are doing a really good job, and in terms of the like, you know, diverse sourcing and interacting with very different communities. So yeah.
You know what? I love this, Ala, but it immediately annoyed me by giving me.
I can imagine. I know. I mean, the idea is
to say, "Hey, sign up with Facebook or something." I'm saying, "Whoa, that's a bit early, isn't it?"
I know. Yeah, exactly.
We just met.
We just said exactly.
But I was wanting to see the table. Okay.
No worries. The idea is like Elastic is in the first place, but yeah. So we need to kind of, you know, to make it public. Let's say that the people can vote for the companies where the particular, you know, underrepresented teams or groups can feel comfortable to say, hey, this is the company that actually takes care of it. So, yeah.
Okay, I don't like that idea. Go ahead, Marcelo.
Here's my challenge with that, and it's the same thing with Glassdoor and this and a bunch of other things. It's actually great. I'm not against it. What I find is challenging for candidates is that they look for some information where. So I'm looking at five companies, and then I'm going to find some pieces of information in Glassdoor. I can guarantee that none of the candidates, or maybe, you know, less than 1% know about Very Good Boss, and they wouldn't be looking for that. And then they're going to do searches. And then you have all these startups and companies that are great. I'm not saying this because we're a startup, but you can't exist, right? I'm not going to easily appear in Very Good Boss. You have these great companies. It's an asymmetry of information. It's a problem that we have a lot of ways. It's not to say that this is a bad process. This is a great indication. How can we have more of this? How can we have our people be outspoken? How can the great work that we're doing about, you know, employee satisfaction, our statistics about the employees that we have, last time I checked, we're a company where it's more women than men. I'm starting to feel like the minority here. I'm feeling oppressed sometimes. And that's a great thing. This isn't something that candidates necessarily know.
Exactly. So create some platform that everyone can trust, and the platform that can show that the company actually influence, put some efforts in some diversity search. Could be something, but it's just an idea.
No, I mean, my criticism of it was similar to Marcelo's, in the sense that how do you trust the information? Because it is, I mean, again, not to hammer Glassdoor, Kununu, any of those products, but at the end of the day, they're gameable. And you can, I mean, I joked initially at the beginning that everyone who's watching Brain Food was paid to give me an upvote. But legit, I could do that, right? I mean, I could literally do that. And that would boost it somewhere. So it's ripe for corruption. But anyway, that's just one idea. I think what we can help is definitely throw more ideas into the mix and then see what happens. So you two have already given us four ideas that really seem to be very positive.
I have one example that is great. Just last week, we hired a new data scientist. And we hired a data scientist intern, not because we didn't want a more experienced person, but because we couldn't find a more experienced person. So at some point, we said, okay, if we can't find what we want, then let's get some younger talent and hire. And, you know, invariably when we hire, we always use the same process. We open up for applications, people apply, they take our assessment, and then we choose talent based on fit. And it was really interesting. We did this with data scientists, which still feels like a very heavily male-dominated genre. And two of our top three candidates were women, which is great. But which is another example why you need objective data into the process. I wouldn't start by looking for a woman when I say I'm looking for a data scientist. My internal image of a data scientist is male. But when I go and run people through the same set of hoops that are objective, it ends up that the best people are bubbling up. And this, in this instance, happened to be women. Not something that we necessarily expected.
Okay, this is an interesting thing to think about, right? Should we actively target women to recruit into engineering, or do we not think about that until we get them into the pipeline? So do we do it blind, or do we do it focused?
You've read about Snowflake, right? That's why you're saying this.
No, Marcelos, let me finish the point, because I think this is culturally different as well. In the US, for instance, it seems that it's very targeted. Have you seen sort of roles that exist like diversity recruiter? We're looking for someone who's specifically targeted towards recruiting a certain demographic of person. Whereas it seems to me in Europe, that doesn't happen. It seems that in Europe, we have a slightly different approach. I know there's legislation in certain countries which prevents you from actually identifying people's biography in this way. France, I think, Ioana, you had experience there, didn't you? You can't take ethnicity data, I believe. So,
right.
So that stops French recruiters from adopting the US approach. So what is the right approach in this case, guys? In terms of, do you prefer targeted, or do you think it's better to try and build a wider pipeline and let the assessment take care of it?
Can I jump in? Because it's itching, right? Why are we where we are today? This is all, I want to ask the 230 people you have here today, why are we where we are today? Because we've done things organically. We've let things flow because things will happen. They don't happen. Unfortunately, bias is real. There's a whole history of not having people in the right schools with the right opportunities, or, you know, not necessarily equal opportunities, but in a sense, time, even inspiration to go in STEM, right? So, or support. Or so I've been in this industry, and people here on this call know your applicants don't come from one source. And each source behaves very differently, whether they're referrals, applicants, outreach, right, events. So all your intentions need to be diversified from the get-go for all these sources. Because if you're counting the Markelos only on applicants for data scientists, you might have a very diverse pipeline because the data science community is getting very, very diverse in the past couple of years. But if you're looking at SRE or any other super like niche technical areas, you can wait for years and none of them will show in your pipelines because they will be very selective where they go because they're not many. So yes, please, intent. That's my take.
That's fine. I'm one of these that literally has no clue which is the right option, or even if they're zero sum, maybe you do them both, you know. How about you, Ala? What are your thoughts on this? Do we target? Would your instinct be to, right, let's just target, or would your instinct be to try and change the operating procedure to make it more like open?
Yeah, I actually, before the show, I asked two colleagues, they're both software engineers in my company, Miro, and I asked, one of them is a female engineer, one is male engineer, and asked them, hey guys, if you can have a look a month earlier, how many reach outs you receive from recruiters? She received 121, he received 67. I do believe we are targeting. So it's just, you know, it feels like we are. And it feels like, you know, women engineers, they're coming back to me also saying, hey, I don't want to be, let's say, diversity token for the company. So prove to me that it was always part of your culture. That's where I will start with. So, you know, online events, investing in communities, investing in the tools that's actually are diverse by definition, not including, you know, it's a women, it's a man, etc. And so there are the conferences, actually two upcoming nice conferences. I can share the links there where the employer can participate and can actually encourage women to deliver, to be more speakers, to deliver more to the community. Yeah, I see you.
Definitely, but put them into this chat. By the way, I love the fact there's ships going into your background there, Ala. That's not fake. You're actually.
It is. I live in the water, but I don't have a nice lighting. Sorry.
No, that's perfect. That's great. So that's very interesting, that the ad hoc experiment. So I think you're right. If you're a woman and you're in engineering, chances are you're getting absolutely overloaded with messaging. Which actually can be difficult because it means, how do you process that? You know, you've got 100 messages before you open your inbox every Monday. Inevitably, you're not going to be able to go through all of that. So targeting, I think, is smart. But if you're going to a very small niche of people, that community is going to get overloaded. And they may then actually end up withdrawing from the job market completely because they're not happy to interact. In fact, that's what engineers do anyway, right?
I mean, exactly. Because that they're happens by default.
Yeah, yeah. They've got to find another way to breadcrumb them in. Let's have a think about the communication side. So let's say we've found people. This is the demographic we want to target. Do we need to vary the way in which we communicate with this person based on gender? Like right now, if I'm a recruiter, I'm like literally loading up all the emails into one email and I'm cranking the big mail merge, right? There's no like gender variance there. It's banging it out there. But is that actually a mistake? Do I need to change the language? Do I need to change my approach based on whether the engineer is a male or female?
here on this one, actually, I'm not so in, because I think there's less data, right, on what works and what doesn't work. But there's a lot of research on how language influences connection, how language influences transparency, right? So I know a lot of people who don't put just their ad in Gender Decoder, but they put their reach outs in Gender Decoder. Right. And maybe it works, but it's ad hoc. Right. Like, I've seen people who are like, I will do things differently because I've seen the results. What is that difference? It might also depends from your own way of doing those reach outs. If you talk only sourcing. Right. But if you talk an event, how do you do the event communication to target and reach audiences that usually you wouldn't reach? Right.
Quickly, Juana, I think you're right. There's not much research there. I'm just thinking about being a recipient of mass mail merge emails. It's pretty obvious no one's done a gender thing on that. Like the people who were registered to Brainfood Live today, there was an automatic email to you, wasn't there? There was definitely no gender variance on sending that message or any kind of customization, just one message. Okay, Rob's mentioned something quite interesting in the comments. Let's deal with that in a bit. By the way, folks, if you have any questions for our guests or panelists, please use the ask question feature at the bottom of the screen. We're going to get to those questions in a moment. So Rob's asked, okay, targeting is inherently biased. If you're targeting one group only, you're limiting another group. Is that a valid point? Thoughts on this?
Let me start by saying what's in the law, right? And if you look at the EOSIM, and that's mostly a US issue, but gladly what we're seeing lately is that the US, even though it's behind in a bunch of other things, it's way up front in terms of legislation, and the EOC has done great work in at least setting out what should happen. And what you're describing is reverse discrimination. At the end of the day, if you say, hey, I only want to hire women developers, you're not legally allowed to do that. Why? Because you're discriminating against all the men out there. And there was this instance, for example, Microsoft said, oh, we want to have 3 persons of color in our board. I think it was Microsoft. And then the EEOC knocked on their door and they said, how do you intend to do that? How do you intend to selectively bring people of color? Are you going to reverse discriminate against all the other people? Are you going to, you know, deprive the opportunity from a whatever Caucasian person to enter? And it's a very fine print. There are very few cases of reverse discrimination actually being pursued. But theoretically, it's the wrong thing. Still, if you think about it ethically, if you're overdoing it, everything is wrong. But if you're trying to fix a situation, you're saying, hey, I've been discriminating for so long. Now I need to catch up and match what the market is. And, you know, I'll never be able to have 50% women developers today because there is not available talent pool. But if the available talent pool is 30% women developers and I'm only at 10, then I should look into ways for improving that. So my answer is, it depends. Be careful on how you do it.
Go ahead, Ala. Thank you, Marcos.
Of course, as a recruiter, of course, I understand. So for example, if I use only one LinkedIn for advertisement, so I'm going to get a very particular type of the profiles. Diversifying the ways how I get the talent, this is will be my highest priority. I get it from conferences, from communities, open source, Slack communities, etc. So I do believe that targeting diverse sources, that would be my approach number one, rather than targeting, hey, I need only, like, you know, female engineers. So I don't want to work in a company that will tell me that. So yeah, diversifying the resources. So that's good help.
You know what, this is a very interesting and often, thank you everyone for contributing on this, by the way, because it's not sometimes easy to talk about this. And hopefully, you know, we're all going to be comfortable to take it to the places where we need to in this chat. Two things. On the legality of it, I'm actually not clear on what the legality of it is. I'm pretty certain it will be different in different jurisdictions, obviously. And this is true for ethnicity, for gender, for other types of forms of underrepresentation, when you can kind of be explicit in what you want to do. Now, I am of the opinion, and again, this may throw me under the... Might as well throw myself under the bus right now, actually. But I'm of the opinion that you should be able to say that. If that's what your target is, you should be able to say we're hiring women engineers. There's a really interesting example that occurred in, I think, Australia. And it was a scandal, a massive scandal, And it was in not recruiting engineering, but a similar field where there was a discrepancy between men and women. And this was in the police force. So in other words, some Australian police force, they wanted to hire latest intake, equal numbers, men and women. But they couldn't actually do it. They couldn't state it explicitly that that was the target, even though everyone knew that was the target. And what ended up happening, of course, in police, there's physical activities you got to do, there's assessments you got to pass, etc. And they found that obviously the people who passed the assessments were overwhelmingly male rather than female. And what they ended up doing was to go back to the females that didn't pass the bar and actually pass them through and say, look, okay, you're now through. And they went to the male candidates who passed the bar and said, actually, no, you're now rejected. And of course, what happened was the male candidates who were rejected unfairly then sued the police department and won the case. And they won the case clearly because they were discriminated against for their gender. Now, all of this is a complete shit show because what's happened is public sectors has cost themselves a huge amount of money. You've got massive credibility issues. You haven't solved the gender diversity problem. And you also have really damaged the entire image of the department in trying to attract women. Would it not be better to simply say, we're going to hire 100 women police officers here. We're going to hire 100 men police officers here. Job done. So why can't we do that?
See, this is a very interesting case of legislation being slower than the desire of the communities we're in to change. And this doesn't help us all the time, right? I think we see some countries are very explicit beyond, like, I don't care about the law. I saw in India, you have billboards with, please come to university for tech, ladies, and we'll offer you a 30% discount on your uni tax. Like, it's very explicit, very call to action, very clear to everybody that, yeah, it will be an affirmative action. And this is how it's, let's say, more framed than positive discrimination. We need to balance the sheet because we are historically unbalanced. But yeah, very.
All right. I want to do a show in India, actually, because that's a crazy recruiting market. But because it's true that Asia is also very explicit on various things, good or bad. Like you can, there's actually adverts to say, you know what, we're looking for this person, ethnicity. And it's like, don't apply unless you're anything else. And you think, okay, is that a good thing? I don't know. But the point of the matter is, I think there is an argument to say, if you have a target, then rather than have it implicit and then have your recruiters implicitly trying to make it happen and also wasting candidates' time. Right. Think about all of the candidates that applied for the jobs, really put effort in, went through all of this process. Some of them even said they were accepted and then had that thing withdrawn, which prompted the lawsuit. That's a mess. Wouldn't it be better just to say and make the case that you should have, I think, policing for sure. You should have equal numbers of police officers on the street, men and women. You know, that's probably something required. So why don't you even say that? Anyway, like I say, I'm probably already under the wheels of the bus. By saying this, so let's.
You are, and that's not always promoting diversity, right? Because once you start getting into a quota system, then you're gonna get any sort of people, and 50% male when you wouldn't necessarily hire your 50% male, just because you want to balance the system. It is tricky. I'm not saying that there exists a good system. What we always like to think about is, A, how can I do the process fair? What both Oana and Ala had said is actually very right. I want to attract the people and create the environment that's going to bring the right people that I want. This is key, and this is what HR has been doing great in some companies, not at all in some others. So making sure that you have an inclusive environment, that's why we always talk about DEI. No one talks just about diversity, right? It's all the three things that you need to do. And then as these people come to you, you treat them equally. And that's where I feel I prefer to treat men and women equally, because as a CEO of a company, I don't have an obligation to run a company that's 50% women. I have to run the obligation to run a company with the best people. And you know what? It happens that half of the best people are women, which is great. I love that. But it's because this is the population, right? And there are no differences really between the two genders.
Okay, so my brain's not working actually. This is another possibly another diversity issue actually. But I was just noticing about Theo, who mentioned something really interesting. Maybe one of the ways in which you could apply a quota system is to kind of look at it in terms of the local society context, right? So I think Marcellus, it might have been you talking about, you know, 30%, if 30% data scientists were women, then your pipeline ideally should be around 30 or so percent. And I remember Thomas Waldeman actually in the LinkedIn chat yesterday said something similar. That was his policy at, I believe, TomTom before when he was the head of TA there, where he wasn't saying 50-50 split as a random number, but he was saying, look, the local demographic available is this. And he made a deal with the hiring managers to say, look, what I'm going to do is the pipeline is going to look like this based on the sort of the available talent. Your job is simply to process them in a fair way. So they're doing the two things in separation. So TA are the ones that are doing, if you like, the numbers on the pipeline, but the hiring managers are then their job is to assess as fairly as possible. Okay, Oana, you're going to say something. Let me actually, Alan's going to say something. Everyone's going to say something. Let's go with Ala first, because I think you're ready to go, and then we'll go to you, Oana.
Thank you. It's very also valid point. It's the head of TA or, I don't know, head of recruitment cooperating with hiring managers. Hiring managers, it should be also for them, in a way, some kind of, you know, goal to make it diverse. It's not only the fight that we are fighting as recruiters, right? And I also trying to probably deliver the message to my hiring teams that diversity, build diversity is taking time. All the things that I'm offering them, like, hey, let's build into the community, let's mentor, let's invest in the universities, it's a learned term. So I will be very honest, only sourcing is something that I see as a short-term solution, like I can put she, her, etc., so create some kind of, you know, sourcing strategy around it, but it's a very long-term problem that we need to start in the company and build it in, you know, in some long time.
Okay, so before I go to you, Oana, that's a very important point. If you're trying to achieve diversity of any type, things like time to hire is a bad metric. If you're under pressure and that's the thing that's crushing you, that's the first thing you need to negotiate with your hiring managers or your business partners, that, you know what, if you want to achieve a better mix of people in your pipeline, then it's going to take more time to get there. And you need to give yourself as a recruiter room to operate. Okay, Oana, you're about to say something, I think.
Yeah, just on this, let's stick to the ratio that those countries produce. It's a very tricky phase. And I have the luck now to work with a half-half gender-wise leadership team. And the leaders identifying as women in my organization at the moment, they're like, we need to do better. Also, one, because they come from countries where the ratio is not 10%, 90%. The ratio is maybe 35% and the rest, right? So they know that it can be different and they want to reach there. Second, we're a global organization. Why stick to a certain country when you can go global, right? And third, you might be an employer of choice for a diverse community, not necessarily stick to the, again, what everybody can do. So I would say there is a different lens. And as Ala said, once your hiring managers, once your leadership is involved, you will see that the 8, 10, 15% is not what people accept or expect, right? And I think this is where we need to go, partnering with those leaders to really see the business value, right? And the human value of having that internally.
Well, you raised a couple of very interesting points, Ala. One thing that was really important is this idea of global talent pool, right? So if is that sort of an opportunity for businesses to really do a recorrect and potentially be an employer of choice at the global level? We do know, for instance, that in engineering, the gender split is actually very different country to country. In India, as an example, actually, there's more women developers percentage-wise than there are in comparable sort of Western European countries. Also the case in Eastern European countries, I think. Former Soviet territories tend to have like quite a high population of engineers. Reasons we don't know, but it can exist and it does happen. So potentially the shift to remote is positive. Which also can eliminate other biases. We can start doing assessments in a different way, for instance, with a remote sort of... In fact, let's talk about that very quickly before we bring on Joshua and Tori, because we need to do that as well. But shift to remote, does that help gender diversity? Yes, no, and how, why? Thoughts on this? Oana?
Yes and no. The expectation that all women want to stay home, I think is wrong.
Okay.
Right? I think what we need is flexibility, not just a solution opposite than what we had before. My thoughts.
Yep, cool. What about the idea of the globalizing it? Do you think that helps companies to look at it should be more available talent, right? I mean, I guess.
My observation here is that people who choose to relocate, they relocate to also be embedded in a certain society or a certain lifestyle, right? It's not just for the job opportunity. So the people who don't want to relocate, but they still prefer a certain job opportunity, you expand your network, you expand your net, clearly, for sure. And the countries like Romania, Ukraine, Bulgaria, India, even South Asian countries, other South Asian countries, you will have a wider pool of talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thoughts on this, Ala, remote working, shift to remote, how does it impact gender diversity in tech?
Yeah, so I always advocate for remote, at least as an option. So anyone can choose if it could be something that they could work with. And of course, it's unlocked a lot of opportunities. I think that we get more talent pool to look into. But it also brought us, I feel, in a situation where, you know, when you in Europe, for example, the hiring process is like that. So this is the tech assessment. This is the way how we assess the talent is. And it's a little bit different what I see from United States, for example. And aligning and maybe making the interview process more global and helping your hiring managers to understand the cultural differences and the diversity differences, that will require some time and efforts for us to make.
That's a really interesting angle as well. Probably something we should talk about on another show, like should you have regional variants for global recruiting, or is it a universal standard you deploy?
If you want to do another show on that, I'd like to understand, how do you do pay scale over different regions? When you have people in the US and in Romania doing exactly the same job,
you pay
why
them
are they paid differently? How do you cope with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting challenge, but I think you have to pay differently. And that's, we're already starting to see that happen. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. Hopefully there'll be some equalization, but a topic for another show. Okay, we've got to move on. So Ala and Owana, thank you very much for your time. We've like absorbed huge amounts of insight from both of you. Thank you so much. Please do hang around. We've got some more questions coming in. So hopefully we'll be able to get your input on those in a bit. But let's say goodbye to you two at this point. Have a good afternoon, you two.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Great to have those two on. Let's quickly go to our, let's go to Joshua and Tori, because we need to talk about from the engineer's point of view. This is going to be like, quite an interesting angle to talk about. We've talked from the tech recruiting side, recruiters who are obviously experienced in trying to hire more women engineers into engineering. Let's talk to some engineers and let's see how they feel about all of this and whether, you know, there is a method or a mechanism that would make sense. And there's Tori. Tori, how are you doing? I don't think we've met before, but very nice to see you. And there's Joshua. How are you doing, Joshua? Good to see
doing
you, sir.
Great. Great to see you. Thanks for
great. Okay. Let's do some intros real quick. Tori, can we go with you first? Who are you and what it is you do?
Sure. My name is Tori. I'm the front-end engineer at Brick. Woo! I'm also the part-time instructor and mentor at a great coding boot camp here in Toronto, where I have actually taught their Women Learning to Code program.
Perfect. Great stuff, Tori. Welcome to the show. And Joshua, who are you? Can you quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I've been first started as a software and systems engineer and worked my way up into management. And I've been running engineering teams both for startups and for a few little bit bigger companies. And first, I want to say this is totally doable. I have had the privilege of managing a team that was almost half women, very close, and a lot of women on a lot of my teams. But I've seen that it is very specific to the organizational culture. And you just see a stark difference between one company and another. But I think it's all about the company. And I think it's all about we're jumping right into it, but it's an exciting topic for me. But it's really about diversity of people. And I think a couple of people nailed this. They said it's about inclusiveness, right? So it's not about going out and finding the diverse candidates, at least in my experience, as much as having the environment where you attract a lot of different people and make them feel comfortable.
You know, that's a really interesting thing. You dove into it straight away, Joshua, but I think it's worth sitting on that a little bit. So you're saying that you have like experienced a situation where there have been a sort of almost gender parity in engineering teams, but other companies, not the case. What is the difference? Like, what is culturally, what is the difference? Give us some clues here.
I mean, I think that's really the magic question, and I wish I had the exact answer for you, and I don't claim to be an expert on that, but in my own interest in this, you know, I went and surveyed all of the women on my engineering team when I had nearly half, and the overriding answer, because I just wanted to understand, you know, what do you like about working here? What makes this your choice to work here or to someone else? You know, I'm not foolish enough to think it was about me. I want to know, what is it, right? And the overwhelming answer that I got is, you know, I like it here because there's a lot of other women here. It's a great, comfortable place. Like, and that is, I think the real question is not how do you hire women engineers or engineers of color or whatever, but it's more like, how do you create that inclusive environment and how do you bootstrap the process if in order to be a comfortable environment, you need to already have a diversity of people for others to see?
Yeah, we mentioned that. I think Juana mentioned that at the beginning, wasn't it? It's like the visible representation actually helps, but how do we get there? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, how do we move to a point where you don't have that sort of diversity and where you kind of try and signal that inclusion? Any thoughts on that, Tori? I mean, so we're looking at a specific use case. Use case is, you know what, it is a fairly homogenous group of people. They do want to move to a more diverse setting, but how do they get there when they don't have it? They simply don't have those people at the beginning.
Honestly, having women in any key roles in your organization for me is going to attract me to your company if I'm looking at your job advertisements. So not just on your engineering team. Honestly, if you have a woman in your interview process that's an engineer, extra super bonus points. But just speaking to a woman in any point of the interview process, and not just a woman, like any underrepresented group in tech, that is bonus points for me. So if you can't find engineers, find women in other roles first, and it may attract them to you.
That's an interesting insight, Tori. And I do believe that's what companies do. You know, they, especially a tech startup, that's my experience. They typically, obviously, they're going to recruit certain job roles in order, typically engineers first, perhaps, and then they bring in maybe some product people, maybe product come first, I don't know. But then there's to try to rebalance the disparity by having more women, let's say, in product or marketing or operations or whatever. Maybe that's a way to do it. I don't know, though. I mean, is that the right approach? Thoughts on this, anybody?
It's helpful.
I'll have to agree with Tori, and you know, you can try to fix everything at the same time, but you can try to start fixing things. If you improve your targeting, if you improve your selection process, if you improve the inclusion to your company, what you're getting is that you're talking to more underrepresented group. More underrepresented groups make it through the funnel, and someone made the point, you should have metrics on your funnel. We've been working on this for too long, and it was hard. But now we give our customers the ability to visualize their funnel percentages. And that has been a boon for them just because they were blind before. But then even after I recruit people, I still have to keep them, right? And I cannot keep them just with salary. Well, it depends on how much you're willing to offer, of course. But it helps to have an inclusive environment, an environment where people will say, yeah, I can see this. I feel that this is a good company made from good people, and I like working here. And the culture is an important part of this, whereas people tend to think of culture as a culture fit. What does each person bring to it? How are they going to enrich it? It's someone else mentioned it. It's diversity and neurodiversity. If we all think the same way, it's going to be a bad place. Luckily, I'm at a company where people are not like me. It would be a horrible, horrible place if everybody was like me. And don't be judgmental now, okay? I'm just saying.
Imagine an army of Michaelises in the business. No, I'm out. Okay, let's talk about, so we heard from Ala and Oana. They actually were on the show a long while, and they talked about all of these ideas that we threw in. How did that sit with you two as engineers when you heard about some of the things that tech recruiters were doing? How did that sit with you when you heard, okay, we're going to go, let's specifically target demographics to recruit? Was that something that you welcomed? What about the idea of my idea of varying your communication style, let's say, according to the demographic you're trying to reach? What are your thoughts on that? Should we specify or should we be universal?
I agreed with everything they said. A lot of the points they made were things that I was going to say, actually. Like there's tons of programs even just in Toronto, where I'm from, that are looking to build the pool of female developers or femme-presenting developers, and looking for those programs to find your talent is a great step. Ensuring that like your messaging is consistent in terms of talking about diversity and inclusion. That's all the kind of things that I would look for when I'm looking for a new job as a female developer.
Thoughts? Yeah, and I would add to that.
Well, Joshua.
Yeah, I think, well, you asked about variance in communication. I actually don't think you should vary your communication. It feels a little bit icky to me to think about something like that, but I do think that you should look at your communication and make sure that what you're doing is universally appealing, right? So that to me makes a lot more sense. There's just having a message that isn't loaded in some way that's going to turn off a certain type of person. If you are doing that and then you're just trying to load up different ways, you know, that to me seems like a mess. I think you just come up with something clean, clear, and as unbiased as you can, and use the tools out there and have other people review it, and you know, just send it to people who aren't like you and see how they react to it. And you know, we talked about culture as well, and I also agree. I think all the points that I've made before, especially I really support all his ideas about supporting communities and going to places where, you know, if there aren't enough candidates in the pipeline of the, you know, size and shape you want, then you can support by getting more candidates into the pipeline. I've had really successful programs where we just couldn't hire enough people, period. So we reached out to agencies that find and test people with aptitude, and then we pay for them to go through an 8-week training program on the specific stacks that we want people to be hired on. And we pay for 24 people to do it in this case. And the deal is that we pick the top 4 that we want to hire. And then within that group, well, you know, sure enough, the top 4 had 2 men and 2 women, and I hired all 4 of them. And it worked out really nicely. And I didn't have to do anything weird about that. But these were all people who had maybe thought about careers in tech, but just didn't have any opportunity, didn't have exposure to the right kind of training. And I found that that worked out really well. Touching on the company culture aspect, I think you really have to look at it. Like, if you cannot hire diverse candidates that are different than what you have now, you really have to look at your culture, because it could be something as simple as, you know, we're all really into skiing and like that's our thing and we have our company ski trip and this is what we do. And then, you know, this person that just applied, you know, well, everyone's worried because they're in a wheelchair now and how's that going to work when we want to have the company ski trip? And they'll just push this person away unconsciously because, you know, very contrived example, but that's kind of how humans work. And so for me, it's a test to say, hey, if I have a group of engineers that are like a clique and they're always talking to each other and they're not really talking to anyone else and they're really into some certain thing they like to do, I'm going to break it up or figure out, you know, hey, how would you guys accommodate? Yeah, you want to play Nerf darts in the office and shoot them, but how would you propose I make it fair for the people who want to sit at their desk and not be worried about getting shot in a Nerf dart, right? Because I want to, you know, if they say, well, screw those people, then this is my problem I need to solve right here. Right. And if they say, oh, okay, it's cool, we'll give a little flag to each person and they'll be off limits and we'll respect it and it's cool and we can all live together, then this is the thing I want to foster and encourage.
Brilliant contribution, Joshua. I kind of was about to interrupt you when you mentioned about this kind of train to recruit concept. I thought that was a really smart way to do it because if there is a shortfall of technical skills, you can pay for those skills to be closed, and therefore you can open up the talent pool. You don't have to keep looking for people that with existing, because let's face it, most things are trainable, right? I mean, it's like not even rocket science is rocket science. I have a friend as a rocket scientist. He tells me it's not that hard. So it's like everything can be trained. So it's one of those where maybe the solution is, or part of the problem is, that employers are always looking for ready to go. We understand that. We understand sort of from a hiring manager operationally, of course, you know, you want someone who's going to slot in, hit the ground running, quote unquote. But perhaps if you want to genuinely move the marble forward when it comes to diversity, you've got to also accept the responsibility of bringing people with you rather than just expecting that they're going to be there. Let's talk about how we do things like assessments and interviews and stuff like that. Is there a way in which we could de-bias this? Or do you think at that point it is pretty much up to the candidate to pass through? What have you experienced as an engineer? If you've been involved as recruiting engineers, like, have you noticed patterns of how assessments play out that produce different types of outcomes? Thoughts on that? Tori, go to you first.
Well, I've only been on the interviewee side for this, but I find that if you jump right in with a super involved 2 hour long, really stressful whiteboarding interview, and the only people in there are men, straight coded men, or people you would expect to see traditionally in those roles, it can be really stressful for me personally and other female developers I've talked to. So having different processes in place, like maybe a take-home assessment that's a little more practical. You know, I'm a front-end developer. I'm not going to be doing super involved bubble sorts or things like that in my job every day, but I will be building React components. So assessing me for the things I'll actually be doing takes a lot of the stress out of that situation for me, and having women involved in that process or other people that are not traditionally involved in that process also takes the stress out as well.
Yep, I think very fair and valid point. Thoughts on this, Joshua?
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, to be very honest, tech assessments is a dumpster fire in our industry for most companies. And the reason I say that is just, you know, based on my experience, large companies and small companies, you have, you know, Google with this hardcore gauntlet you have to work your way through, which definitely has biases towards certain types of personalities. But the majority of companies just have no formality whatsoever. You know, the tech assessment you receive may be just the roll of the dice on who was chosen to be your interviewer. And they have not been given some kind of set of criteria to review. They have not been given a standardized way to evaluate your answers. And so it's not fair for anyone. It's not fair for them. It's not fair for the candidate. And this is really something that needs to be addressed. So in every organization I'm part of, I push hard to standardize these things, not just the kind of questions we'll ask, but also the criteria by which we will evaluate it. Because my goal is, and the goal should be, that if the same candidate interviewed three times and had their assessment done by three different interviewers, they would get nearly the same score. And if that's at all not the case or at risk in your organization, you know, that's you know there's bias in the process, right? Because it's uncontrolled. There's no, you can't even take two different candidates and compare their results if they weren't, you know, asked the same questions by the same people and judged the same way. So I think there's a huge amount of work to do. Now, there's a lot of resources there for this. But in terms of diversity, I think if you aim at fairness, you kind of hit diversity. You know, this is something that Ala and I talk about a lot as well, because we both see it from both sides, from all sides of it. But whether you're doing a take-home assignment, whether you're doing a whiteboard assignment, whether you're doing pair programming, or I'm a big fan also of what I call a review challenge, where I'll ask the engineer to come in, and for example, if it's going to be about building React components, I will share some code samples that I had pulled from our actual staff that had been already reviewed and updated, and ask them, can you review this? And here is our standards guide to just kind of show you what we think about, and let me know, what do you think of this code? Where do you see maybe things that should be corrected? And I can already have a list of all the things that I would have had corrected. So I have a standard way to grade this. And I'm looking to see, you know, do they identify the same things? Do they find something we didn't know about? You know, that's really exciting. This for me is much more interesting than sort of just code under pressure. But I do think there is a place for task-oriented things where you can say, at a minimum, the person we hire can do X in 60 minutes with access to Google. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Yeah. And you try to make it as fair as possible. And it shouldn't be like 100 things they have to do, but there's a couple things that you just need them to hit the ground with, and then you know you can train the rest.
And that's the right way to think always about assessments, right? It has to be equitable. When you're going from an assessment to a whiteboard exercise, it's nowhere near equitable. It depends on, you know, how you heard the question. If you happen to know that topic and you have no access to resources, not everybody, well, I can still bubble sort probably without help. But if you ask me a quick sort, I can Google it. I cannot do it the other way around. Mm-hmm. Equitable is really important here. And you don't want to remove the human factor from the equation, but you want to provide guidance, because people are not intentionally biased. They're not meaning to do bad, but they work that way. So give them guidance, give them the things that matter for the role, and they're going to do better. One thing that I always dislike when people say, oh, you know, we have only so few candidates for engineering, we're only going to do tech assessments. People forget that technical skill is just one component. And I always laugh when people say, I want to hire rockstar developers. So my answer is, so you'd like to have Freddie Mercury working for you? and his tantrums. Is that what you're looking for? And no one says, yes, I'd love to have Freddy working for me. They forget that being a developer means being there and sticking through hard problems, being adaptable, being open to change. And these are things that are not necessarily the same skill sets as being a great coder. So, you know, I personally, back in my day when I used to code, I could ace a tech assessment. I have always been a lousy developer, not because I couldn't code, but because I'm not, I don't like to follow rules. If you give me coding styles, I'm always going to question them. No one wants me on their team, believe me.
They you sound like a penny ass, Makelos.
I am a penny ass as a developer. I'm great at what I do, right? I'm great at doing this kind of things. But I spent 10 years trying to become a developer, and I just wasn't the personality fit. People don't know that. They're blind, and they're looking for this kind of guidance. And you can actually provide this during your selection process. A person who's not going to be a great developer might make an awesome product manager, might make something else great.
You know what? That's a really important point. The assessments that we're currently doing or have been locked into doing, habitually doing in tech recruiting, are only analyzing a narrow part of the person's potential sort of function and the things that they do. And it's also going to be optimized for a certain type of person. Typically, the person that loves whiteboard, doing a whiteboard interview is the person that's passed the whiteboard interview. Do you know what I mean? So you can imagine.
That's so true.
It's almost like an ego thing where, you know, I could do it. Therefore, that's the bar of quality. But in fact, no, you know, if that person been involved in a different recruiting process, they may have had a different outcome. So, you know, that type of bias is, I think, quite clear and needs to be at least thought about. That's not to just, you know, throw down on whiteboard. I think the arguments can be made either way, but you simply have to be aware of those factors. Listen, folks, we are moving really close to being over time. We're already over time. I want to go and hit the questions real quick. There's a couple of ones that have just popped through. So Tori and Josh, if you're okay to help us deal with these, that would be great. Actually, Tori, this is perfect for you. John Rose has said, look, should you engage with candidates who have gone to college or co-camps over universities? So this is like a direct, do you do the code camp people before you do the university people? Tori?
I don't know if there's a before or after, but do both. I mean, I'm biased. I went to a coding boot camp 5 years ago. I still am involved with one as my part-time job. But I was looking at the stats today. It's something like 20% of graduates from computer science programs are women. At least at my coding boot camp, it's a lot higher. And it's certainly my coding boot camp is extremely diverse in other ways. So do both. There's nothing stopping you from doing both. I don't think there's a particular order you should do it in, but look at all types of applicants that you're getting.
Quick question, Tori. You may not know this, so don't feel that you need to produce sort of the definitive answer, but do you think there's more women doing boot camp or co-camps than there are women doing CS at university?
I think that there's a lot more women doing boot camps now, going into boot camps as a second career option. When I did mine 5 years ago, 25% of us were female in my course. The last boot camp I mentored before I started at Brick, it was closer to 40%. So at least I'm seeing the numbers increase there.
It'll be interesting to see the rate of change because I'm assuming there's more women moving into CS at university. I could be wrong. If I am, please correct me if I'm wrong.
I think there is as well.
It feels that way. But it'll be interesting to see whether the rate of change is actually comparable in some way to bootcamp stuff. But I guess, John, in answer to your question, you know, if diversity targeting is a thing you want to think about, then yeah, maybe you should do the co-camp. I mean, stats will tell you that's probably the better option.
Well, if you're thinking about this in terms of sourcing, yes, do everything. If you're thinking about in terms of what am I looking in a resume, you should look for neither. It doesn't matter. Look for a person who have the skills, have the personality, who have the tech skills. This is what you care about. Whether they went to Harvard or they went to, I don't know, a code bootcamp, it's really not going to matter.
Okay, cool. Listen, Komal, I'm not going to answer that question because it was related to sales and also because I think we've dealt with possibly some of those answers during the course of this chat. Okay, listen, folks, we are well over time, so we got to close it off here. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Tori and Joshua, great to have you come in at the end to give us the view from the technical point. I remember actually we did from a developer's point of view, I think earlier this year, Joshua, you're involved in that. We should probably do something similar again where, you know, we actually bring in more engineers to be more participating in into these conversations and really help bridge the knowledge gap between the recruiting community and the engineering community. Okay, Tori, you have a good day. Great to meet you.
You too.
Joshua, you have a good day. Good to see you again, sir.
Thanks for having me again. You have a good one. And yeah, let's do it anytime.
Great. Okay, that's about it. What a wonderful show. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed it and you got some value from it. Again, I need to really document this and like have something that I can send to everybody because basically there was loads of gold in there. I think the message is generally optimistic, like it can be done. There's just lots of different levers to kind of pull. No silver bullet, but lots of different things that recruiters can do to directly impact the improvement of diversity, gender diversity in the tech engineering pipeline. So I hope some of this has given you some inspiration and thoughts of going further forward. Marcellus, final word to you. How can BRIC help with this? Can it help with gender diversity in engineering? What's your answer to that?
By all means. And you know, the thing that we hear most often from our customers is that ever since we've started using BRIC, I'm talking to candidates I would have normally ignored. And this is the essence of diversity, right? It's not that I'm getting better candidates just like the way I use, but I'm talking to people that I would have ignored, that they're diverse compared to what I've been having before. And now I'm finding great talent. And remember, this is also an answer to the problem, where do I find talent? Expand your horizons, be more diverse. So I'll invite anyone here of the group, visit us at brick.com. Thank you for sharing the link, Hung. Have a talk with our team and see how this thing can positively help you with your diversity plans. It works and it's easy. And that's one of the important things. Don't expect to find a solution neither in sourcing or in, you know, fixing up your job descriptions or in what we do that's going to solve everything. But as you start adding things, as you add BRIC, as you fix your job descriptions, as you create a more diverse and inclusive environment, you're going to start noticing change. And that change comes faster than you'd think. That's the most important learning.
I think so. That's fantastic, Marcellus. And, you know, sometimes it is just about shifting the perspective just a little bit. And like it looks like if you just look at it head on, you think this is a huge challenge. If you just like pivot just a bit and look at it from a slightly different perspective, suddenly you might find options that you didn't even realize they were there. So do check BRIC out. Okay, Marcellus, thanks so much for joining us and being an awesome co-host. You have a very good day. I think you're back next week. We're going to do another show talking about the ethics of AI in recruiting. It's going to be a fantastic show, folks.
Love that topic.
How do we use AI in a way that is ethical in hiring? Because we've had a lot of people, I think the recruiters are generally backlashing quite hard against AI right now. They're thinking, look, it's baked in bias. It doesn't work properly. It's all this kind of stuff. Can we use it in a way that actually makes sense for us and it's still ethical to use? We've got John Sumson coming to join us. We've got Rob McCargow coming to join us. We've got more friends coming to join us. So make sure you're there. If you like this channel, folks, make sure you follow it so you get a notification for the next show. We'll see you next Friday, I think at 3 p.m. British Summer Time. So have a good day, everybody.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's it, folks. I hope you enjoy the show. Like I say, follow the channel. We'll be back next Friday.